Welcome to Rings of Power Reactions. I'm Aaron, your host and fellow Middle-earth wanderer. Here you'll find reviews, reactions, and deep dives into the lore behind Amazon Prime's Rings of Power. To go deeper, come wander with me on my main podcast, Lore of the Rings. Visit ringspodcast.com or find Lore of the Rings on your favorite podcast player. Now, let's wander Rings of Power. The greatest deceit of all begins with a gift, and every gift has its price. Today on Lore of the Rings, we wander into Rings of Power Season 2, Episode 2. We will go far afield into some deep, deep lore, from Fatty Bulger to Aule of the Valar. But don't worry, I'm here to guide you, because not all those who wander are lost. So Bilbo was fond of saying. I'm Aaron, but you can call me Annatar, sharer of gifts of knowledge. Just kidding, don't call me that. I'm simply your guide to wandering Middle-earth. Shout out to my new friend Benjamin, who sent me this note on Instagram, quote, "Your extensive knowledge of Middle-earth has been a phenomenal aid for me while tackling the behemoth that is Tolkien's Silmarillion." Benjamin, thank you so much for sending in that note. You have no idea how much that meant to me. It came just at the right moment. And I really love that I've been able to help you enjoy Tolkien's world just a little bit better and to kindle some of that light within you. And huge thanks to my supporting wanderers. At the elf level, we have the Old One. Thank you so much for supporting the show. And if you'd like to join and support the podcast, head over to ringspodcast.com/donate to find a membership level that suits you best. Or if you'd rather, you can buy me a Dr. Pepper or two. Every little bit helps to keep this journey going. Now, let's wander. In this episode, we pick up with Durin and Disa in Khazad-dûm, where the volcanic eruption in Mordor is causing trouble, and Durin's feud with his father continues. The three ring-bearers wrestle with the implications of having the rings, and the Stranger and the Harfoots cross the desert and come face-to-face with new perils. Let's begin with the title. Yes, you guessed it, the title. That seems to be like a good place to start in many cases. The title for this episode is called Where the Stars Are Strange. This title, at first glance, comes from Season 1 of Rings of Power, where the cultists were trying to convince the Stranger to come with them to the east. However, it is actually a line said by Aragorn in the Fellowship of the Ring book. At the Council of Elrond, Aragorn has been introduced as Isildur's heir, and he shares a little of the journeys that he has done, including, quote, "Into the far countries of Rûn and Harad, where the stars are strange." These lands are far to the east from any event in the Lord of the Rings books or movies that we've seen thus far. However, note that the stars are pure creations of the Valar. Stars have never been corrupted by Morgoth or Sauron, and so all stars are given as signs of hope, goodness, and light. However, not all lands in this episode enjoy the light, as the opening scene depicts darkness befalling Khazad-dûm due to the earthquakes that stem from the eruption of Mount Doom in Mordor. And Season 2 continues the precedent set in Season 1, that the first episode does not include the opening credits sequence, but rather the opening credits sequence is first shown in Episode 2. And for this season, the sequence has been updated with new symbols and images to look for. Eventually, I'll do a bonus episode exploring all of those images, so we're going to leave this for now. Let's start with Galadriel's dream. It opens up with her planting seeds similar to what Adar did in Season 1 before the battle. Celebrimbor, or rather Halbrand's voice, speaks to her saying, "Are these not the seeds you planted?" And this sets up the main internal conflict for Galadriel. She feels responsible that Sauron still lives. It's also really chilling that Celebrimbor, as he's seemingly dying from the trees, speaks the three lines of the ring verse in black speech before he is brutally killed. Galadriel knows Sauron's mind very well. Already the connection of the rings is sharpening her perception. Gil-galad seems somewhat guilty to have the ring on his finger as he covers it up with his other hand. But Galadriel feels like she is perceived, like she is having glimpses of the unseen world. In Tolkien's lore, the unseen world, also referred to as the invisible world or wraith world, represents a parallel dimension or reality that is usually hidden from mortal sight. This realm coexists with the physical world of Middle-earth, but is not directly perceivable by normal senses. Some elves in particular had the ability to perceive both the seen and the unseen worlds. As Gandalf explains to Frodo in Fellowship, quote, "For those who have dwelt in the blessed realm live at once in both worlds, and against both the seen and the unseen they have great power." The unseen world is most directly referenced concerning the Ringwraiths, or the Nazgûl, who exist partially in this realm due to the corrupting power of their rings of power. While they remain invisible in the physical world, they are also shadowed in the unseen world, making them hard to see or fight by ordinary means. Gil-galad says that the ring is giving Galadriel the ability to see, quote, "that which has not yet come to pass." That line is strikingly similar to the line that Galadriel uses to describe her mirror to Frodo in the Fellowship film. However, the line is a bit different in the book, which says, quote, "it shows things that were, things that are, and things that yet may be." Gil-galad says that he sees black clouds over white towers. Is he describing perhaps the Battle of Minas Tirith in the Third Age? And yet Gil-galad uses that old dialogue trope again, quote, "it is said." Who says that? And how would they have known? I do like a little gem of lore in Gil-galad's concerns here, though. In the First Age of Middle-earth, we find one of the three great tales, the Children of Húrin. Húrin was a mortal man who fought valiantly alongside the elves, and as punishment, Sauron's master Morgoth chained him to a high peak, cursed his children, and forced Húrin to watch from afar the tragedies that befell his family. In the Silmarillion, we find this line, quote, "Unhappy was the lot of Húrin, for all that Morgoth knew of the working of his malice, Húrin knew also. But lies were mingled with the truth, and aught that was good was hidden or distorted." For more on Húrin and the tragedy of his children, listen to episodes 26 and 27 of Lore of the Rings. You can find those by going to ringspodcast.com/26/27, and then picking your favorite podcast player. All of that is to say, I see a precedent in the lore for Gil-galad to claim that Sauron can deceive to the point of altering the reality as perceived by his victims. Gil-galad is concerned that Sauron has already infiltrated Galadriel's mind. If Sauron has, then I see another potential character arc for Galadriel. She, and everyone around her, is convinced that she has been compromised by the Deceiver. However, in the Fellowship of the Ring, she has grown to a much different place. There she says to Frodo, quote, "I say to you, Frodo, that even as I speak to you, I perceive the Dark Lord and know his mind, or all of his mind that concerns the elves, and he gropes ever to see me and my thought, but still the door is closed." I read in that line that Galadriel is in a constant psychological war against Sauron, and she is able to deflect his piercing mind away from the elves. Galadriel uses another pet peeve dialogue technique that I'm noticing. It's when she opens up that line saying, "supposing." Once you hear it, you'll notice it like 3 or 4 times an episode, and it gets really annoying. Anyway, let's swing back to Eregion, where Halbrand is still waiting around to talk with Celebrimbor. And we find out that Celebrimbor is waiting for news from Lindon about the efficacy of the rings. However, those messengers have been killed along the way, although we don't actually see who perpetrated that killing. Back to the east we go, where the masked rider who was watching the stranger and the Harfoots arrives at some sort of compound in the sand. The name of this place is given to us as Karas-Gair in Western Rune. If you pull up a map of Middle-earth, such as in your copy of Lord of the Rings or in the trusty Atlas of Middle-earth, and you look at the land of Rune far in the east, this is what you'll find. A big blank space, except for an inland sea called the Sea of Rune. So Karas-Gair is a Rings of Power invention. Nevertheless, let's see what we can learn by translating that place name. Assuming that the name is Sindarin, one of the Elvish languages, Karas is similar to a place name that you may already know, Karas-Galdahan. That is the name of the actual city in Lothlorien, where Galadriel dwells in Fellowship of the Ring. Karas means fortress or walled city. The second part, Gair, has several translations, one of which is dreadful or awful. Another meaning is sea, S-E-A, but this seems unlikely since it's in the middle of the desert, unless it will later be revealed to be near the Sea of Rune I mentioned a moment ago. But let's assume the first meaning, dreadful or awful. Putting these together, Karas-Gair can mean dreadful fortress. This implies that the place has a dark and sinister purpose. And that is certainly what we see happening here. It begins with a ceremony in which it appears the moths have been gathered. These moths, if you remember, were the result of the stranger using his power to banish the three cultists who attacked him at the end of season 1. But who is the cult's leader? The X-ray details on Amazon Prime Video call him the Dark Wizard. One possible explanation is that this Dark Wizard is one of the two Blue Wizards.
We're not done yet. If you like this episode, please leave a review and share with your friends. And remember to subscribe if you haven't already. We'll be right back. Parents, here's a gift idea that doesn't require batteries, screens, or endless assembly on Christmas morning. It's called the Dadventures Deck, a deck of silly adventures and unexpected twists for you and your kids. Pull one card and suddenly you're on a superhero bike ride or turning the backyard into a treasure island. My daughter still talks about the memories we've made from this deck. I've only got about 20 of these decks left, and once they're gone, they're gone. So if you want a simple way to spark memories with your kids this holiday season, go to ringspodcast.com/deck. Again, that's ringspodcast.com/deck. Start making more epic memories with your children today.
You may have come across a few veiled references to the Blue Wizards, most notably in the Hobbit film, as Bilbo and company are being rained on, Gandalf mentions the other wizards, Saruman, Radagast, and the two Blues, though he has forgotten their names. However, in Tolkien's book titled Unfinished Tales, we learn a few more details. These wizards actually had names, Alatar and Palando. Let's take this a step further. In one draft of Tolkien's stories, these wizards actually arrived in the Second Age of Middle-earth, around the time that Sauron crafted the One Ring. That certainly fits with the timeline as given in Rings of Power. That reference comes from the History of Middle-earth, which is a tome that I have even barely dug into. Okay, one last reference to pull this all together. In a letter written in 1958, Tolkien wrote about the two Blue Wizards, saying, quote, "I suspect they were founders or beginners of secret cults and magic traditions that outlasted the fall of Sauron." So my current going theory is this. The cult leader is one of the Blue Wizards, and the stranger is the other. The stranger's storyline will be a choice between joining the cultists and their dark magic, or taking Tom Bombadil's advice and helping the light. Of course, we haven't seen Tom yet. We've only actually seen Tom and the wizard stranger, interact in the trailers. So that's simply conjecture. But I think that would be a really intriguing storyline for the stranger slash wizard. The Dark Wizard mentions Mumakil thieves. The Mumakil are what the hobbits called Oliphants, those huge elephant-like creatures that the evil men from the south bring to the Battle of Minas Tirith. Now we come back to Nori and the stranger as Nori is trying to discover the name of the stranger, and she mentions Fredegar. I take that to be a nod to Fredegar Bolger. Fredegar, nicknamed Fatty, was a friend to Frodo who helped him plan his secret escape from the Shire, although he wasn't included in Peter Jackson's films. For more on Fredegar Bolger, check out Lore of the Rings episodes 154 and 155, at ringspodcast.com/154 and /155. There's another echo of Fellowship of the Ring that I see here too. Hobbits are on the road, following an errand given to them from a wizard, being chased by five mounted black riders. That definitely has some callbacks to Frodo leaving the Shire. And the scene of the rattlesnake with the masked rider only feet away from them calls back to the movie scene where the black rider nearly sniffs out Frodo and the ring. We return to Khazad Dûm, and this is where we are first introduced to Narvi. Who is Narvi? You may not know Narvi, but you certainly know his work, even if you have a mere passing knowledge of Lord of the Rings. When the Fellowship leaves Rivendell, they make for the Mines of Moria. On the outside wall of Moria are the beautiful gates wrought with the silver writing that is revealed by the moonlight. The Fellowship is stuck here, until in the film, Frodo figures out the riddle. Speak, friend, and enter. What isn't highlighted in the film are the writings below the riddle, which read in part, quote, "I, Narvi, made them. Celebrimbor of Holland drew these signs." Narvi was the dwarf who made the famous doors of Moria, and he made them in collaboration with Celebrimbor. Tolkien provided his own beautiful illustration of these doors which you can find in the Fellowship of the Ring book. What is truly unique about them is the symbol of collaboration that they represent. These doors contain both Dwarven and Elvish symbols, as Gimli and Legolas are both excited as they come upon the doors, and were made by the master craftsmen of both the Dwarves and the Elves. So that's where Narvi comes in. Now, we haven't seen those doors to Khazad-dûm created just yet in Rings of Power, but later on in this episode, we see Celebrimbor experimenting with Ithildin, a substance which Gandalf informs us, quote, mirrors only starlight and moonlight. The Stone Singers fail in their attempt to resonate with the stone and find the light. This is a Rings of Power invention, of course, but I think it fits with the lore, especially if you consider that the physical world was created through music. And so music is in the deepest nature of all creation in Middle-earth. Check out episode 1 for more details on that creation story at ringspodcast.com/1. When Disa is chiding her father-in-law, she mentions one mountain by name, quote, the peak of Zaraxagil. You actually already know and have seen this peak before. This is the tallest peak that Gandalf describes in his fight with the Balrog, and the same peak where his body will die before he is sent back as Gandalf the White. Let's circle back to the Greyhavens in the west of Middle-earth, where Galadriel seeks to resolve things with Elrond. We are seeing a different Galadriel, a more reflective Galadriel, starting to see a path to wisdom. Yet I wonder too, since in season 1 she was so brash and prideful, yet in season 2 we're seeing her to be more conciliatory, I think in future seasons we'll see Galadriel strike a balance. She'll have the eye of commander and warrior, yet the wisdom and grace of a great elven lady. I look forward to seeing more of that. What I do not want to see more of is the supposed romantic connection she had with Halbrand. Where is Celeborn? Elrond still believes that the rings are tainted by Sauron's hand, and Círdan is shaving. I find that kind of funny. In the course of his conversation, he mentions two ancient elves that Elrond would be familiar with, Rumil and Dairon. It would seem that Círdan, being the eldest of the elves in Middle-earth, had some personal experience with these ancient elves, but that has a little bit of a lore complication. Rumil is mentioned in the Silmarillion like this, quote, then it was that the Noldor first bethought them of letters, and Rumil of Tirion was the name of the lore master who first achieved fitting signs for the recording of speech and song. So Rumil was the elf who invented the first writing systems for elvish languages. But here's the complication. He did so in Valinor during the First Age, and Círdan never was in Valinor. It's possible that they met later, or Círdan heard some stories secondhand, or that he didn't even have that personal of a connection with Rumil, as I infer from the conversation with Elrond here in Rings of Power. So that's Rumil. What of the second elf that Círdan mentions, Dairon? From the Index of the Silmarillion, we learn that Dairon is, quote, minstrel and chief loremaster of King Thingol, deviser of the Kurth, or runes, enamored of Lúthien and twice betrayed her. Okay, that's a lot to throw at you, so let me break that down. Dairon was a minstrel to King Thingol. Thingol was Círdan's friend, and he established the realm of Doriath in the First Age of Middle-earth. Thingol is father to Lúthien, who in turn is Elrond's grandmother. Dairon loved Lúthien, but she did not return his affections, and chose instead to be joined with Beren, the mortal man. Okay, now you know too much, but if you want a refresh on Lúthien's tale, check out Lore of the Rings, episodes 20 through 24. Now, all that aside, I'm struggling with Círdan's argument in favor of the rings. He says that they are powerful, therefore they should use them, so that Sauron doesn't use the rings against them. He says, quote, do not let that fear blind you to the ways it can be used for good. This does not sit well with me, because that is the argument that many of the Council of Elrond make. Use the One Ring for purposes of good. And yet, its very danger and potency is how Gandalf, Elrond, and Galadriel explain why they should not use the One Ring. That is the main temptation of the ring. Use it for good, despite its evil beginnings. And that's the exact reason why they turn down the One Ring and decide to destroy it. Now, I get that the three are not the one, but I cringe at this argument from Círdan, who is supposed to be the wisest elf in Middle-earth. Let's wander back to the eastern deserts. The staff they find at the well looks like a shepherd's staff to me, and the tip of it speaks to my mind like the shape of a snake. If so, that draws me to another Old Testament reference to Moses, who turned his staff into a snake in Pharaoh's court. So I'm picking up on a pattern this season of several Old Testament references, and in particular to the story of Moses. The staff is not the last biblical allusion that we see in this episode. We still need to explore the major revelation that Halbrand drops with Celebrimbor. We'll get to that right after this break.
We're not done yet. If you like this episode, please leave a review and share with your friends. And remember to subscribe if you haven't already. We'll be right back. Parents, here's a gift idea that doesn't require batteries, screens, or endless assembly on Christmas morning. It's called the Dadventures Deck, a deck of silly adventures and unexpected twists for you and your kids. Pull one card and suddenly you're on a superhero bike ride or turning the backyard into a treasure island. My daughter still talks about the memories we've made from this deck. I've only got about 20 of these decks left, and once they're gone, they're gone. So if you want a simple way to spark memories with your kids this holiday season, go to ringspodcast.com/deck. Again, that's ringspodcast.com/deck. Start making more epic memories with your children today.
Let's go back to Eregion. Halbrand is able to manipulate Celebrimbor into inviting him in. He's got that brooding look as if he were conjuring the rain himself, just to make Celebrimbor feel so bad for him. And Halbrand gives us a masterclass of manipulation. He makes Celebrimbor feel isolated and underappreciated, with just a little bit of Marxist philosophy thrown in. Is Sauron referencing some resentment he had under Morgoth's leadership there? Perhaps. I want to point out a few things in Halbrand's transformation to Annatar, which I believe was exceptionally well done. When Celebrimbor is reveling, he somewhat chides Halbrand, saying that he doesn't know what it's like to finally create something. There's a shot of Halbrand's face. His look is almost regretful and longing. I think Halbrand/Sauron knows that feeling exactly. You see, Sauron did not serve Morgoth at first. The member of the Valar that Sauron first served was Aule, the master craftsman of the Valar, and also the creator of the species of dwarves. Okay, stick with me to a, quote, isolated and undated note that Tolkien attached to one of the unfinished tales. Another name that Sauron gave himself was Ayulindil, or, quote, one who is devoted to the service of the Vala Aule. Therefore, before Sauron served Morgoth, he served Aule, the master craftsman of the Valar. Halbrand reveals his intentions to Celebrimbor. He wants rings for men. And in nearly the same breath, he mentions that the dwarves are having issues of their own. So there you will have all the rings out on the table. 3 for the elves, a request for rings for men, and dwarves who will need to solve their own dilemma, with rings of power, how conveniently. Celebrimbor is of course hesitant, claiming that men are covetous, which would probably come off stronger if the elves themselves had not been showing so much coveting of their own for the 3 rings. Then Halbrand begins his final reveal with this line, quote, there are forces in this world beyond evil, Celebrimbor, and sometimes they send aid in the form of an envoy. This line is lore-inspired. Going back to that undated note in Unfinished Tales, we find this insight, quote, when Sauron came among the Noldor, that would be Celebrimbor, he adopted a specious fair form, a kind of simulated anticipation of the later Istari. So whether by some incredibly accurate guess or some other secret knowledge, Sauron knew that the Istari, or wizards, would be sent from Valinor to the aid of the peoples of Middle-earth. So in true evil fashion, he takes what would be a good thing, aid in the form of supernatural powerful beings, and twists it to his own designs and deceits. He plays to Celebrimbor's weaknesses, who wanted nothing more than to be recognized for his skill in crafting, and so rise above the fame and prestige of his grandfather, Feanor. A quick reminder on Feanor, he was the elf who created the 3 Silmarils, which were magical jewels that encapsulated the living light of the 2 trees of Valinor. Playing to Celebrimbor's pride, Sauron claims that Celebrimbor will be known as the Lord of the Rings. What an incredible misdirect! Then the actual reveal itself, where Annatar appears as if descending from the clouds like an angelic being. seems very much like yet another biblical allusion to me. He introduces himself with his new name, Anatar, Lord of Gifts, and his gift is secret knowledge. I love this transition. I think it was masterfully executed. The callbacks to obscure lore are skillfully woven into the scene, and the dialogue I actually love. It shows Sauron's cunning nature, how he twists the truth to serve his own purpose, laying the groundwork for his manipulation of Celebrimbor. I am fascinated to see how this so-called partnership will be explored. Time to score this episode. On a scale of 1 to 5 wizard staffs, 5 being over-the-top amazing, and 1 being just plain bad. Let's start with the story. Between the dwarves, the stranger, the elves, the conflicts are clear and the motivations are good. Let's give it a 4. Characters, their actions, and choices, I'm going with a 3 on this one. I'm still not jiving with Elrond's motivation, and Círdan's arguments for using the ring are just kinda bland to me. Dialogue. Some really bad lines, but also some really amazing ones. So this lands as a 3 for me. Visuals. 5. I really love to see Khazad-dûm and the Anatar reveal. Very awesome. Music. For this episode, I'm going to give a 4. The music is amazing, don't get me wrong, but I don't recall a moment where the music really pushed the emotions over the top for me. Although I could be convinced for a 5 as the ring verse theme plays during the Anatar transition. And most important, lore faithfulness. Anatar was a big, big plus here. But the elves' feelings about the rings and the reasons for using them are just too far. So this lands at a 3. So that brings Rings of Power Season 2, Episode 2, Where the Stars Are Strange, to a 3.7 Wizard Staffs on the highly objective Lord of the Rings scoring guide. But what did you think? I want to hear from you. And I mean it when I say hear from you. Will you join me in a little experiment? You can send me a voicemail. Go to ringspodcast.com and tap the little gray microphone button in the bottom corner. There you can leave me a 2-minute voice message with your thoughts and questions on this episode. And I may even include your clip in a future podcast episode. So please head to ringspodcast.com, tap the gray microphone button in the corner, and send me your thoughts, so I can actually hear from you. And if you loved this episode, I would appreciate a 5-star rating and review, but really the best appreciation you can show is to send a link to this episode to a friend of yours, a friend who is perhaps wandering in the far deserts, and you can provide a little Middle-earth guidance by sending them a link to this episode. Huge thank you again to our executive producer for this episode, The Old One. Again, if you would like to join the Wandering Fellowship, head to ringspodcast.com/donate, and you too can be a producer on the Lore of the Rings podcast. And as always, thank you for wandering Middle-earth with me today. My friends, if you enjoyed this episode, let me know by subscribing, leaving a review, and sharing with your friends. Follow me on Facebook or Instagram at Lore of the Rings podcast. For feedback on the show, please email me using the link in the show notes. Until next Thursday, remember, not all those who wander are lost. Parents, here's a gift idea that doesn't require batteries, screens, or endless assembly on Christmas morning. It's called the Dadventures Deck, a deck of silly adventures and unexpected twists for you and your kids. Pull one card and suddenly you're on a superhero bike ride or turning the backyard into a treasure island. My daughter still talks about the memories we've made from this deck. I've only got about 20 of these decks left, and once they're gone, they're gone. So if you want a simple way to spark memories with your kids this holiday season, go to ringspodcast.com/deck. Again, that's ringspodcast.com/deck. Start making more epic memories with your children today.